On this episode of Sales Burrito, we are going to talk to you about demos and yes, when and when not to do them. I think you would agree with us that time is one of our most important valuable possessions what we all have as sales engineers. This is why we have our special guest, Peter Cohen, here today to show us how to get it done. Welcome to Sales Burrito.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time! Welcome to Sales Burrito! The premier podcast for today's sales engineers working in technology sales, created by SEs for SEs, with your host, Enrique Barreto and Dave Siles.
Hey everyone, it's Dave Siles, and welcome back to the next episode of Sales Burrito. With me, as always, is my cohort and partner in crime, looking very dapper today, Enrique Barreto.
No, man, you're getting even better with that rolling of the R. And I am dressed up in my favorite t-shirt because we have a special guest with us, the one and only Peter Cohen, which I will say that I'm going to start with the last thing first. So thank you for all the knowledge that you have given us, man.
No, pleasure is absolutely mine. By the way, I have a question for you. How come it's not the whole enchilada?
Well, we have these monikers of knowledge chips and the chipsters and the whole enchilada. The whole burrito thing is like when I came to the United States, a lot of people used to say, hey, you have a collect call from Enrique Burrito instead of Barreto. And then eventually I had to Americanize the name to Barreto and without rolling the R's. And that's where the burrito comes in.
Got it.
Yeah. And if you think about it, Peter, you know, as we think about SEs and the roles and the skills that you need, it's really all these different layers. And when you get it just right, it's a perfect thing, right? So you can have a really delicious burrito. You screw it up with the wrong ingredients and it can be horrible, right? And it's a great segue on why we're having this episode today. Really, we want to talk about, you know, when and how to demo and maybe when you should not demo. And, you know, who better to ask than, you know, the author himself of the great demo. So, Peter, it's great to have you here today. You know, Peter, obviously, you're the principal and the founder of the Second Derivative, also the author of the great demo methodology. And you've really been helping, you know, engineers and companies deliver results through selling and demoing. And it's great to have you on the podcast.
So the pleasure is truly mine.
One of the things that I think is important, you know, from an SE's perspective is really understanding the results you need and where you need to spend your time. And those time is obviously a finite resource. So you really got to deliver results and get the results that are done and are going to deliver the deal. And, you know, the demo is kind of key to this entire equation. You know, I would love to understand your take on, you know, when to demo, when not to demo. You know, that was pretty intriguing to me when you threw the topic out at us, because I think we always think about, yeah, we need to demo, you know, that flip side of saying, do you really need to demo? And, you know, the one thing I've gotten, you know, kind of from reading some of your readings and your podcast, listening and blog posts, or, you know, do you need to even show a demo, or the, you know, historically what I would call the soup to nuts demo, right? How much do you really need to show to drive those results? You know, as we go through kind of this current pandemic that we're sitting in, have you seen, you know, the world change because of how we've had to deliver demos now that, you know, really the method of bringing them to market is the virtual world?
So an intriguing question. The answers are no and yes. Has the world changed? Well, absolutely the world's changed. But for many people in pre-sales, I think the world has changed only from the standpoint that they're doing less traveling than they used to or no traveling at all. But many people have been delivering demos over the web, using Zoom or GoToMeeting or WebEx or whatsoever, for years and years and years. So in one context, it's changed dramatically. But in others, particularly with respect to the, I would say, how one prepares for and delivers demos, that should not have changed, independent of whether or not you're delivering them face-to-face or over the web. And that's a great topic.
Gotcha. Now, going into the topic today, right? Why would you not even want to do a demo?
So let's think of demos in terms of two sets of objectives.
Okay.
And the first objective most people think about is proof. What we're trying to do is provide proof of our capabilities to our customer. And so with respect to the degree of proof that's required, it could range anywhere from a phone call to a peer. In other words, somebody who's a senior VP or VP or C-suite person who says, hey, Bob, hey, Dave, I understand you're using software called X. Two questions. Is it doing what you want? And would you buy it again? And if the answers are yes, do you need anything else at that level in many cases?
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
So that's the least expensive form of proof. Below that are demos, below that are POCs, and then below that are pilots. What I urge people to do, both for the vendor and the customer's sake, is to seek to achieve proof with the least expensive form. So number one is proof. And before I go on and talk about vision generation, any thoughts or comments on that?
No, what you said something pretty interesting, because as Dave and I were preparing ourselves for this episode, we were looking anecdotally on, you know, have I ever done a demo where it did not lead to a proof of concept, right? And I can see myself that there were some occasions where I did that. But I think what I've often have found is that on startups, it's almost like embedded into this, maybe the sales reps or the sales leadership's mentality that you must do a POC, even though you probably did a killer demo, right? So to me, that's one of the things that is puzzling. I would love to hear your perspective on that, because, you know, I have to believe that if there is a right way to doing a demo, reference selling, anything of that nature outside that POC should not be even part of the equation.
So I'm in violent agreement.
Awesome.
Again, we're trying to secure the order with the least expensive form of proof. And that's something that just has to be tested. Let's take a look at the world around us. How many things do we purchase as consumers in this case, but we'll map it over to business. How many things do we purchase that we never try before we buy? There's no proof step. It's just, you know, it's a book, it's a device, it's headsets, it's microphones, it's chairs. Mm-hmm. Now, on the other hand, and also in the world of business, I should say, we also do that. But when we are reaching bigger and bigger levels of risk is when we in business want to see deeper and deeper levels of proof. And so that's really the conversation that needs to be had with the customer. With respect to, let's say, the deeper demos where you're trying to achieve technical proof. Does that help?
Yeah, absolutely. 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 Right on.
Yeah. And Peter, and I saw one of your blog posts. I think it was from maybe a couple of years ago. You know, I think it had a pretty interesting title, like Stunningly Horrible Harbor Tour Demos or something like that. And I, you know, I love that analogy that you use. I mean, when you said the IKEA demo, I was like, oh my God. It's like, you know, you get into IKEA, you're never getting out until you see everything. And then you have to walk through the clearance aisle still as well. And, you know, that throw up and show up and dump all this information where you're really not getting anything out of it other than spewing information. So I love your concept in that that article about, you know, the quid pro quo. You know, leverage, you know, one compelling piece of your demo and use it for discovery. And, you know, if you get discovery out of it, they earn the right to learn a little bit more about your solution until you get to that point where they're just so on the hook that, you know, you can move forward on the opportunity or move forward to that really next substantial step. And I realized it was written a couple of years ago, but I still think that still rings true. But has anything kind of changed in the best mentality of ways to think about that? Because I think that was pretty powerful.
Actually, no, that mentality hasn't changed. That's the way we as humans operate in most things, with the exception of things that are long stories, like a movie, because we're looking for entertainment in those cases. Mm-hmm. And I will share with you that even though most presenters try to be entertaining, from the customer's perspective, the last thing we want is an overlong story. So yeah. There are two types of demos to contemplate. The first we just talked about briefly, and we'll come back to, are technical proof demos, where discovery has been done and you're seeking to achieve proof in the customer's mind of your capabilities. The other is called vision generation, and this is where huge errors are made. So vision generation is the art of the possible. It's providing the prospect with just enough information for them to say, oh, okay, I get it. I could see where this could go. And to be blunt, vision generation demos probably only need to be 2 to 4 to 6 minutes in length for most products and most individuals. Mm-hmm. All they're trying to get, all the customer's trying to understand is what's possible using these general capabilities. What can I do with this offering that I didn't understand or couldn't do before, or that is better than what I have in place, and by how much? So one recommendation here is to think in terms of where are we in the sales cycle or the customer's buying process. And if you're in an early stage, all they want to know is, if you will, the back jacket. Remember physical books?
Yeah.
Who here still gets physical books? Remember the back jacket of a physical book? It has what on it?
Yeah, it's got the synopsis, right?
It's got the synopsis. Just enough for you to say, okay, this looks interesting, or no, it doesn't look interesting, I'm going to let it go. That's a vision generation demo. It's like, have you ever gone to a Korean restaurant?
Not me personally, because that's not my cuisine of choice, but...
I love Korean food, bulgogis, that whole thing. I'm in.
All right. Okay, so perfect. So, Enrique, so before you were conversing with Korean dishes, what did you use to figure out what to order on the menu?
Actually, I think what I use is either I search it quickly through Google or Yelp or something of that nature.
So where I was going with this is pictures.
So shop the pictures.
Yeah. Pictures.
Pictures worth 1,000 words, buddy. Come on.
And that's vision generation. It's just enough to give you an idea of what this could be like. And then to move the discovery, this conversation forward, to move the buying process forward. Later on, when the customers had a chance to really determine what do they want out of this package, what specific capabilities they're looking for, then you put together a technical proof demo that focuses on those capabilities, and I'll use light pun here, specifically. So let me offer the opposite. What percent of capabilities would you guys say you use from, let's say, Microsoft Word?
Not even.
Not exactly.
Not even 5%.
Yeah. Can you imagine a demo of Word by somebody from, let's just say, Microsoft, for example, where the demonstrator felt obligated to show you everything because that's their standard demo?
No way. Yeah, I could not sit through that thing. You could not pay me to sit through a demo of every feature.
I rest my case. And here's the huge disconnect. Product managers, marketing managers' perception is the more capabilities, the more features, the more value. Would you guys agree?
100%, since I'm currently working on a project such as. So yes.
So what is the customer's perspective though? I just want, and here's an important consideration, I just want to pay for the capabilities that I need and I'm going to use. I don't want to, A, have to pay for all the other stuff I will likely never use, and B, I certainly don't want to have to learn to use it, and so C, don't show it to me in a demo if you've already asked enough questions to understand what I'm looking for. Does that all resonate?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Actually, as you were talking, I remember one of the startups that I was part of, we used to say, hey, we only have 30 minutes to do a fantastic demo. You know, so you have 15 minutes of doing that fantastic demo and you have 10 minutes of, you know, just tell them about the company. And what is very thought provoking about what you're saying is, if instead of just doing, I mean, that led to a lot of, you know, I hate to call it, you know, throw up and show up or show up and throw up, right? So, but what you're suggesting is quite remarkable, because if I can walk you through the imagine if I'm able to do this and take them to that chasm of the vision in a 4 minute or a 6 minute type of demonstration, it gives me plenty of time on that first call to do plenty of discovery to continue to qualify the opportunity.
So that makes perfect sense. And actually what you're describing in a perfect universe is a one call close, wherein you did initial qualification, you did vision generation, you did discovery, and then you did a technical proof demo, all in the course of an hour or an hour and a half. And by the way, I used to do those when I was your friendly neighborhood regional West Coast sales representative for a company last century. Mm-hmm. I would do basically a 2-hour meeting and go through exactly that process. And it was a delight. Customers loved it. I loved it. And it led to a very, very nice franchise.
That's a great story, Peter. I mean, you know, I think, the age old problem of SEs is that, you know, they have to do the demo to secure the POC, to secure the win. You know, have you seen historically, you know, that great demo can defer the POC, or is it still kind of that stepping stage to get through the discovery to still have to do that POC? Because obviously, depending on the size of the deal, I think there's some transactions that can be transacted by, you know, a great demo and winning it. You get these enterprise sales that are 7-8 figures, you know, where there's just, you know, there's going to be some stages involved. But have you seen enough in your history and experience to say that, you know, that perfect demo can deflect, you know, that add-on exercise of always having to deliver a technical proof of concept or a proof of value?
Absolutely. And it, you know, it depends markedly on the nature of the offering and where the customer is in the marketplace. Are they an early adopter? Are they, you know, a majority player? Are they late majority? This will determine exactly how the customer is going to operate. But maybe I should make this a logical and. I often start my great demo workshops by offering a couple of success stories that I've received as email messages. And one of them is fabulous. It's mm-hmm. It was from a participant that went through a workshop, and 1 month after completing the workshop, he forwards me an email message from one of his customers. And that message read, and I'll paraphrase, it read, "I want to thank you for the demo meeting that took place yesterday. It was crisp, it was concise, you addressed all of our business issues and concerns," and the message read, "You get the order, full stop." But there was a second paragraph. Any guesses as to what that second paragraph discussed?
Where are we going to have drinks? I don't know.
That would have been the right second paragraph. No, it said, we want to let you know that we have never before purchased enterprise software. And this is a big order. Without requiring a fillable POC. Mm. But the letter went on, the email went on to say, but because of the way you executed discovery, you asked all the questions and uncovered our issues and all of our concerns and our risk points, and because of the way you put together and delivered the demo that addressed our concerns and our issues and our risk points, we feel comfortable to move forward without a fill in the blank.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's so simple. It's so thought provoking, because if you do a good job, right? I think that sometimes consumers want to touch and feel the product in their data center with their own data set and whatnot. But if you have the right tools, if you're able to understand, the pain, understand how do you map that technical pain to a metric or a business metric, you know, and you're sitting with your sales rep, right? So it's a sales team approach. You can build something, a demonstration that covers that and almost negates, it almost gives you the license to say, but why would you like to do a POC in your environment, right? If I showed you all these things and I've proven to you that it will work in your environment.
So this, and again, it's going to depend on the nature of the software and the nature of the customer, and the maturity of the marketplace. But I think this is and I love your organization's name, because it's a rubric to keep in mind that mm-hmm. you only want to invest in the amount of proof that's really required to secure the sale. So, but, you know, going back to the real world is there's terrible demos out there. Would you like a mini horror story?
My gosh, I can tell you one. I can tell you one straight out of the back that it resonated when I read one of your blogs, right? Which it was the lunch and learn. Look, Dave and I, before the pandemic, you know, combined, we were probably doing 200,000 miles a year, and you know, the amount of demos that we had to go into a lunch and learn, or whether it was at a specific restaurant that we was, you know, it is very, robotic, right? And in it's almost like if you're not captivating the audience, it's you know, why show up and I'm sorry to use it, but show up and throw up, right? How when you look at that, you know, what are some of the tactics that you would do as a sales engineer to think differently when doing a demo during a lunch learn?
So the article on Lunch and Learns offered two approaches. One is called the menu approach and one is called vision generation demos. And the menu approach is exactly that. Going back to our restaurant analogy, let's say, Dave, you sit, imagine this happens. You sit down at an elegant restaurant, and actually this is perfect because Enrique is wearing a tuxedo. He's perfectly dressed. He comes up to you and he says, actually, I'll be your waiter today. So I'm Peter. I'll be taking care of you. What would you like to have?
Yeah, I love the smorgasbord, right? I mean, yeah, it's free lunch.
Sorry, this is do you think this is like Shoney's or something? Well, no offense to Shoney's. I do like Shoney's.
We've got a big kitchen. We can make all kinds of things. What would you like?
Yeah, I mean, you're gonna want the most expensive thing on the menu, and I think you're going to...
Well, you use the word. The first thing you need, so you can say, menu, well, right? Let's see, do you have any... eat a menu, because a menu does two things for you, the customer. It enables you to see, number one, what's possible, and then from that list of what's possible, you can choose what's most interesting to you. So if you're doing a lunch and learn session, you've got 25 people, let's say, in the Zoom session or face-to-face, and they're all different job titles. How do you decide where to start? Well, offer a menu. Say, hey, folks, here's seven different topics seven different problem areas we could look at today. Give me a show of hands or a virtual show of hands for this first one. I'll explain what we mean by this, and then this one. And if you go through that, in about 5 or 7 minutes, you've got a nice agenda based on your audience's interest for the whole rest of that session.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. You know, and I just was trying to spend Enrique's money, so that was a little bit of a personal.
As always, of course.
This is where you want to apply DoorDash and send him a pizza.
Yeah, that's true. You know, but you bring up a good point. You know, trying to relate this back to obviously the world we sit in today. I mean, you know, we're not going to be having, I think, lunch and learns physically anytime soon, but. You know, adapting that same kind of concept into the virtual world. You got any tips and tricks for how to deliver that kind of menu approach over Zoom or, you know, WebEx, whatever it may be, you know, from a telepresence perspective?
Yeah, the amount of organizations that are doing now like virtual wine testing or virtual whiskey testing or virtual, I've even seen organizations on LinkedIn doing virtual sushi, you know, cooking, and they have, you know, how can we help our audience when it comes to, you know, field marketing, creating these events, and they have to do a demo.
Well, this is two sets of topics here. One is how do you drive interactivity when you're operating over the web? And the other is the form and function of lunch and learn sessions. But the first topic, just briefly, you've got to translate what you used to do in face-to-face sessions to the web. So, for example, I cannot tell you how many times I come into a web session and over Zoom or whatever, and somebody in the audience has not turned on their webcam. And so what do you do? So I say, could you guys all please turn on your webcams, unmute, let's do some introductions, what's your name, what's your job title, what would you like out of this session? So right at the beginning, you are pushing and driving interactivity. Don't let folks hide. I love to use the analogy of a face-to-face meeting because you wouldn't come into a face-to-face meeting conference room with your hands over your face like this, would you?
No, at all.
So, you know, first of all, you'd probably smash into the door, but why would we think otherwise in a web meeting? So we can begin to draw those analogies and invite our customers to participate as they might more likely in a face-to-face session. Is that the kind of direction you were going here?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think so.
I'll share another thing, and that is I cannot tell you how many online demos, remote demos done over the web, start with the following phrase, can you see my screen? And then what happens next for 58 minutes?
Checking, check. I mean, it's every I will say that it's, I mean, if how many times I hear that word a day? Yeah. There you go.
Yeah,
there you go.
I'm guilty.
So I'm gonna give two words and ask you to reflect on them. Annotation tools.
Okay. Yeah.
Your colleagues or how many of your team members actually use the annotation tools in Zoom or even PowerPoint for that matter on here a regular basis? And I'll predict.
Here it is.
You're preaching to the choir. He's going to pull out his
You are the 1 in 50 that does that. I've done math.
Are you serious? Are you serious?
I'm serious. I literally watch thousands of demos over this last several years because I'm always asking my customers to share their demos with me to help me prepare for their workshop.
Sure.
They're all, since March, for me, they're always done over the web. For 17 years, I've been watching demos over the web. And it's an easy number to calculate. I would say easily 98% of all demos done on the web have zero use of annotation tools or and for that matter, almost any other interactivity technique. It's all, can you see my screen? And then it's click and talk and click and talk for the next 58 to 60 minutes. Mm-hmm. So
that's boring. That's boring. You want the audience, wouldn't you think you want the audience to kind of be engaged by you looking at what you're doing on the screen?
Oh, no. We want them bored so they can get some well-deserved rest.
I know, but it goes.
So there's driving interactivity by training your audience at the beginning of the session. Check, can you see your mouse at the various locations of the screen? Check latency. Check to make sure they can see your font sizes. These are little tricks that are both pragmatic to make sure that what you're trying to present is going to be clear, but it's also training your audience to respond to your questions. Here's the other phrase I love for remote demos. Hey, I want this to be interactive. Please ask questions as we go through this session. Okay, how many times have you ever heard that?
Mm-hmm. I've lost.
But the reality is, you know what the pre-sales person is thinking?
What?
They're thinking, please don't ask any questions because I've only got an hour to go through all this stuff.
That is true. That is true.
That is so true, Peter. That's probably the meme of the week, for the current world. So yeah, absolutely.
By the way, startup guys, the problem gets worse with every new release. Think about it. A year ago, you had an hour to do a demo, and it was probably comfortable. You could get it done with a few questions. Now, it's a squeeze to get it all done in an hour, and God help you if the customer actually asks some detailed questions because you really don't have time for them. And a year from now, what's going to happen?
Yeah, it's going to be another release, another 50 features you got to talk about, and yeah, you got to break that mentality. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now we're moving. Yeah. Now, what you just said is the key. Do you have to talk about them? And the answer is no. That's what Discover is for. It goes back to our Microsoft Word example. Do you guys want to see all the features, the capabilities that Microsoft has implemented over the past, 35 years?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the way that you put, the way that you describe the analogy now to me of Microsoft Word, I think has changed my perspective completely. Because to your point, I want to know what the pain is, right? And yeah, Word has so many features, mail merging, whatnot, and that allows me to focus as a sales engineer on what matters the most to that specific audience, not in general terms. The times that I see, anecdotally, right? If we take Word out of the equation, the time that I see, there'll be an SE that says, hey, what kind of hypervisor you have? And he says, I have, I don't know, Microsoft Hyper-V, for example, not to plug in Microsoft. But then that SE may show the features of the product on a VMware environment. Well, that's not the same. So you have to relate to the audience. You have to relate to their environment. You have to relate to their pain and be able to show them there is a light at the end of the tunnel. So, but the Word analogy is by far one of the best Word analogies that I've heard in the years that I've been doing this. So thank you for that.
You know, in the restaurant business, it would be like the wait, like, Dave, you sit down at the table. I'm your waiter. I don't give you a menu. I don't ask you anything. I simply put one of every single dish that we make in the restaurant on an enormous table in front of you and say, enjoy. You're overwhelmed. You couldn't possibly consume it all. Well, we might try, but we couldn't possibly consume it all. The word analogy is really strong. Here's something else to think about, and I love this. When the somebody says, our competitive differentiators are. Mm-hmm. So there's some really interesting comments about that. Any guesses to where I'm going with this?
Yeah, it's going to be, it's going to be a ton of, weaknesses versus our strengths, but it's not going to add value because it's going to come off as fuddish. I mean, at the end of the day, it's what they typically come across as.
That's exactly correct. It's only competitively differentiating, number one, if it's something the customer wants or needs, and number two, if there's actually a way to compare against the competition. I can't tell you how many times somebody in a demo will say, I want to share with you our competitive differentiators. And I'm listening, I'm thinking, well, I don't care about that. Well, I don't care about that other thing. And actually what you're really telling me is,
I gotta go look at this other competitor now.
Exactly. And it looks like I'm probably going to be buying too much. So can you take those differentiators out? Cause I'm not going to use them.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, listen, Peter, it's come the close to our segment. Any parting words of advice for, we have an audience that listens from IT managers to new SEs to experienced SEs. Any parting thoughts or advice to them to be able to, be better at what they do today?
Absolutely. So contemplate the following. Whatever you're doing right now could probably be better. And I think that's a mantra we can all live with. We should be constantly trying to improve our practices. I wrote a great demo now about 17 years ago. Many of the principals told me, sorry about that, hold on. It's the one thing I couldn't shut up. Okay. I wrote a great demo. Here, I'll start that again. I wrote a great demo about 17 years ago, and many of the principles still apply, but the reason that there's a blog and the articles and all these podcasts and things is because things evolve, and we should always be striving to get better. And that's especially true today in the world of demos and software.
Yeah, it's amazing. What's the best way for people want to follow, obviously, Peter, your writings, your blog posters are a certain place that they live on the web that people should subscribe to?
So the easiest way is to go to greatdemo.com. There is the website, there's articles, there's a blog, and all the news events of podcasts and webinars just like this one.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. And for our audience, you can stay engaged with us at salesburrito.com. Be sure to follow us on all social media platforms at Sales Burrito. And again, a new podcast drop every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern. And until next time, this has been Sales Burrito.
We hope you've enjoyed the Sales Burrito Show. To subscribe to catch future episodes wherever you catch your favorite podcast. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook at Sales Burrito. Until next time, keep the chips and salsa going and the knowledge flowing.